I run away from everything. I'll find a way to cast away my fucking dreams. I'm so unsure of my own course. I separate the hope in me from everything that doesn't fit reality. I know she says, it's in my head.
Welcome back to the Movie Draft House. I'm your host, Mark, and I'm joined by co-host Jeff.
Good day to you, Mark. It's draft night. I hope you're prepared, because next month is spooky month, and I got some
crowd
spookies for you.
Crowd goes wild, because Mark's going to pick the better movies. Yeah.
He's going to pick the bad movies?
The better movies.
Oh.
Anyways.
That remains
before we
to be
get
seen.
Before we get into what we watched this week, we got to plug some music, and we're grateful this month that the band Here's to Now, they're from Los Angeles, alternative rock band, allowed us to use their song Thieves all this month here on the podcast. We appreciate them. Be sure to hit the show notes to where you can get all the links to their social media accounts. They're doing big things. Jeff, once again, I'm going to ask you if you've listened to the music.
Give me just a couple minutes. Thieves.
Anyways, no, we appreciate them. We'll have new music for you next week, but be sure to hit the back catalog for all of the month of September. You can hear them. They're doing big things. Their EP is out now. Anywhere you get your music from. Jeff, I don't know what you're doing right now, but
I'm ready to talk about the movie.
Okay, good. What did we watch this week?
Well, of course, today is the final day of Matthew McConaughey month, and I got to say, possibly the second best month we've had.
It has been a good month.
It has been. The first being Erotic Thrillers month. What a great month.
Oh, that was a good month.
That was a good month. But we watched Dallas Buyers Club from 2013. It runs for an hour 57. And, of course, stars Matthew McConaughey, the man's bathroom, who Mark has peed in, Jared Leto, as well as Steve Zahn and Jennifer Garner.
Steve Zahn is more of a bit part here.
He really has a small role, yes.
Yeah, I didn't realize how small of a role he has. But I mean, it's a recurring part, but it's very small. So, Jeff, you had never seen this, correct?
Correct. I have not seen this. I don't follow Oscar buzz, really, so it honestly had never come across my radar until you brought it up one time.
Yeah, so you mentioned Oscar buzz, and this was nominated for a lot of Academy Awards. I'm trying to pull up.
I got you here. Many. Best Motion Picture, Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role, who Matthew McConaughey won. Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role, which Jared Leto won. Best Achievement in Filmmaking nomination. Best Achievement in Makeup and Hairstyle, which Ardeuth Lee and Robin Matthews won.
Okay.
And then Best Writing Original Screenplay, they were nominated.
Got it. So,
in 2020, Jared Leto won the Golden Derby Award for Best Supporting Actor of the Decade.
Golden Derby? Okay. Let's go,
the
Jared
decade.
Leto. Let's
How do you,
go.
Who quantifies that?
It's I don't care, but enough. He got it.
I know
he
you don't it. Care because you've got a Van Damme style hard on for him, much like I do for someone with the best ass in cinema.
All right.
Yeah.
We're gonna talk about my hard on for Jared Leto and him playing a female in this this movie. Anyways.
Yes.
What overall thoughts?
It's a fantastic film. It's special.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really wonderfully made, wonderfully acted. And not only that, it's a story that you just get behind, and it's filled with hope and love and fear and death and all the good things that make a movie a movie. How does that sound?
Very generic, but I get behind
generic.
It.
Here I am thinking I'm complimenting this film, and you'd be excited that I enjoyed it as much as I did. My bad. I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad, because I also, this is, I think, my third time watching it. And the amount of commitment Matthew McConaughey pours into this role is phenomenal. It's Christian Bale level commitment here. And prior to this, I don't think McConaughey had ever been regarded as a super serious actor. And you know, because he was an A-list actor, but most of his stuff was, you know, bigger budget stuff. He was a rom-com guy.
Yeah. How to Move Out of Your Mom's House in 10 Days or whatever.
Yeah, right. And so, and then he does this movie, and he loses a shit ton of weight, and he looks deathly ill. I mean, there's portions of the movie where he looks better than he did, but the entire movie, he looks ill as fuck.
He's very thin compared to the ripped, smooth ass we saw a couple weeks ago, yes.
Right. And I just, after watching it, you knew, like, the movie, and it's, you know, for an Oscar Beatty movie, and, you know.
Yes, okay. I almost feel that's unfair to say about this movie. I mean, I guess it is Oscar bait to a degree, but there's something when I hear the word Oscar bait that makes me reflux, and mostly because I find them to be so overly serious and so, like, I don't know, like, look at what we're doing. This movie has a very natural feel to it. Yeah. It feels, I almost want to say effortless, like the performances are so good. And the storytelling is so good that it's just a good movie. I don't know that it's, I mean, it might be Oscar bait. They might have put it together just to get the Oscar attention. But I think what they did instead is just made a really great film that happened to win an Oscar. I mean,
yeah.
Like, no, I Oscar bait, and I just feel like they're so pretentious a lot of the times, whereas this just isn't at all.
Right. It's, yeah, you're correct. It doesn't come off as pretentious. It doesn't come off as artsy. Like there's very little, like, there's cinematography here and it's okay. But it's not off the charts. Well, like they don't go out of their way to like show sweeping landscapes and all
that's
that.
That's not the point, right? So it's more about the characters and just tell, you don't have, I think that's why I like it, is because it is just a movie shot in to tell the story, and that was it, you know.
Yeah You know, it's directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, who died in 2021. That sucks. He was only 58, but you know, I was looking through his filmography, and he directed some other lesser-known films. One I've seen, Wild, starring Reese Witherspoon, that wasn't necessarily very good. But, you know, I think back to, like, it only takes a filmmaker one movie to really make a name. And I think that this was this guy's movie, and he decided he was going to tell the story of this guy with AIDS, Ron Woodruff, and his you know, trials and tribulations of trying to find a drug that could help him, but then in turn started a movement of I guess. It didn't showcase, you know, the AIDS epidemic? No.
Yes.
Epidemic, yeah.
Not a pandemic, but an epidemic.
It's not a pandemic, right. But, like, you know, so I enjoyed McConaughey here is because he starts out as a not a villain, but an unlikable character.
Right. He has a character arc, which is what movies are supposed to do. Right.
Right. Like,
I mean, he goes through change and he becomes a better person. You know, he starts off, he's a womanizer and a racist and homophobic. And, you know, by the end of the movie, his best friend is a trans woman, you know. So,
right.
What does that tell you? That's a heck of a character arc. And I think is what, honestly, that part of the story is what makes the movie so great. The background of him getting, you know, the drugs to bring back and to essentially become a drug dealer with, you know, medicine to help people with AIDS live longer. But what is the best part is there's a couple things I really like. The relationship between him and Rayon and the story of the FDA being a bunch of shitheads. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, this
part
movie
too.
Clearly it puts a target on government, right? I think that's the overarching, you know, theme here is that, you know, the FDA is not there.
They're not
for
your friend.
Anybody.
Right.
And I think that, you know, that's the backdrop of this film.
And one thing I think kind of isn't said, but I think maybe you can kind of glean out of this is there's a joke that Dave Chappelle has where he's like, when it was the crack epidemic, no one cared, but now it's the opioids and everyone cares because white people are dying. And I wonder right. like how much of that would be like when it was the AIDS epidemic and it was just gay people dying, no one cared. But once right. straight people started getting the disease, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we got to get this fixed. It'd be interesting. Yeah. I don't know if that was an attitude at the time or not, but it feels like it could have been.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you're talking so, and like, what better actor to get to play a bisexual man than?
I don't think she was bisexual.
No. I'm talking about Matthew McConaughey's character.
He's not bisexual.
Yeah, he is.
No, he isn't. When does he have sex with a man?
In the beginning.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
Those are women.
He's having sex with a woman and a man underneath the bleachers of this rodeo.
Those are two women.
That is not two women.
Bro. Okay. I'm going to pull it back up, but maybe I'm wrong. But I don't, because he's. No, I don't. I'm. Go ahead.
Look it up.
I'm pulling it up, but I'm fairly certain it was two women. Because, though, I mean, it's still, you know, bisexual people can still be homophobic because they're hiding.
Correct. And
that's what happened here.
That is him in this movie. He doesn't regard himself as homosexual because he still very much enjoys women.
I don't think so, though. Like, he has that wall, and it's a really funny moment, of, like, nude pictures of women, and he's jerking off and looking at one, moves to the next one, and then he gets to the one at the end, and it's like Boy George or something. Okay, I got the scene here. Let's see. All right, he's watching bull riding. Yeah, that's two women, bro. You look it up.
I am looking it up.
Yeah,
I'm
two women
it up right now. There's a scene where he's having sex with a man in this movie.
I disagree. I don't think so.
Was Ron Woodruff bisexual in Dallas Buyers Club? At some point in this movie, he has sex with
a
man.
No, he doesn't. You said it was under the bleachers, and it's not. The other scene that maybe you're thinking of is there's a scene at home after he's been diagnosed, and there are two women there and, like, his best bud.
No, that's not the same.
Those three are thrown down in the other. He does not have sex with a man in this movie. He doesn't. I don't know what movie you watched, what cut or version. If you went to an adult website and found your own version of the film, but in my watching, he at no point has sex with a man.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, good. Keep that in your Google history.
May have been openly bisexual. I just looked up this article. Oh, okay. Racist, homophobic, but was not a homophobe. According to those who knew him, but rather openly bisexual. This is the real person, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways,
all I'm saying is I don't recall a scene in the film.
I could have swore there was a scene where he is like a man's kissing him on the back of the neck.
I think you're thinking of the opening scene, and there is a very tall woman in that scene, but it is not a man. Feel free to watch it again, but I think this is a moot point at this moment. I don't think it actually... I mean, it does. I mean, if the character's bisexual, it does change things, because then his interaction with Rayon is, you know, different. He's hiding his own sexuality, but I don't remember that, and I don't think that's the case.
So, like, and that would make sense because he is, you know, at first, like, and this is how I portrayed it in the movie, because in my mind, I guess I saw him, knowing the story behind it, I saw him having sex with a man.
I just don't.
I don't know. That's weird, subconscious thoughts.
Which is fine. You know, it's fine. I don't care that he does or not. It definitely changes things. But I did not see that happen in the movie.
Either way, you know, his actions in the beginning towards towards gay people in the beginning, because, you know, he gets labeled as such. You know, somebody finds out that he's got, or he runs his mouth when he's high, to his friend, who they're having an orgy in his trailer, and he,
who does that, yeah, man? Like, awkward is your relationship with your friend? Like, if I was at your place and in the next room with the door open, you're having an orgy. I think the podcast is done at that point.
Really?
I can't look you in the face anymore.
Really?
I mean, if the door is open and I see Baby Mark and the boys swinging around. No.
Baby Mark.
I can't. I got to leave. I mean, I just can't. I don't need to, you know.
Listen, I found my new nickname for my.
I like my the plutonic nature of our relationship.
Baby Mark and the Boys. That's a good band name, by the
way. It is a good name.
Baby Mark and the Boys.
And they find out later it's about dick and balls.
No, I just, like, his arc, Ron Woodward's arc in this movie, and how McConaughey plays it is fantastic. Is because, like you said, he goes through in the changing moment. And I don't give a fuck what you say about Jared Leto. He is phenomenal in this role.
Did I say anything?
No, I'm just saying you have said in the past that you don't like, you don't prefer a Jared Leto performance.
So I don't like his bullshittery. Like, he's kind of noted as being a bullshit kind of guy, but also the main is his method acting, which is bullshit. Your method acting is kind of like a reason to be a dick. Like, I can understand this aspect of, like, method acting. So when he was the Joker and he's sending dead rats and shit, that's stupid. He's just doing that to be an asshole. You don't need to do that. Right. But if he, to prepare for this role, dressed in drag and experience what it was like to be a trans woman in this world, to understand the hardships that they go through, and went to several, you know, gay clubs or whatever. That's not method acting to me. That's research, and you're learning about the person, the character. That's fine. It's all the stupid shit that method actors tend to do when they're method acting. It usually is just because they want to be assholes. And you never see, like, if Jared Leto played a very charitable person, I don't think he'd method act to the point where he's giving stuff away to charity. He just get, you know, like, that's what I don't
get.
Like.
I get it.
Now, whether his performance is good or not, I can take that by what's just on the screen and agree. Like, I found at a point in this film, I was not watching Jared Leto. I was watching the character, and I really liked the character.
Yeah.
So for that, that's a plus. That's what your job is. But there are a couple moments. The issue, too, with Jared Leto is he has such a distinct face that sometimes it's hard to unsee him, right? But at some point in the movie, I did click in and I got to experience the character of Rayon. And then there's the scene where he goes to see his, where she goes his to see dad. Her dad, and which is an excellent scene. And then there's the scene right before she goes to the hospital for the final time that's, you know, hard to watch. You know, I don't want to die. I can wholeheartedly agree with Jared Leto's performance in the film, deserving of the Oscar. And it added to the picture in a positive way.
Jared Leto, a very good looking man, right?
Stunning eyes. I don't like the guy, and yet he has stunning eyes, right?
A perfect casting choice, here by Jean-Marc Vallée.
Now, the part of me is like, is there a trans woman you could cast in the role instead?
In 2012? No.
You're probably right.
Probably not.
But there might have been a gay man, though. This is not taking away from Jared Leto's performance, but that would have been my preference. But it doesn't hurt the film that they didn't, but I just would have liked to have seen someone of the LGBT community get the role, not just for the work, but also they'd be able to bring a level of commitment that no straight white male would be able to bring to it.
Yeah, I just don't think when this movie was made, that type of spotlight to representation was as big of a deal.
Yeah,
as it is now.
You're right. I'm not arguing that. I am just saying what I would have preferred. And again, Jared Leto's great in the movie, so
when I'm watching it, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, Leto's great, but the movie completely shifts, and I it's got to be on purpose, but the movie completely shifts when Leto gets involved and when his character is introduced, and it's because it's almost the. It's the turning point of the movie. It's the turning point for McConaughey's character.
Well, and you know, watching it, because he is so sexist and not really sexist, but he kind of is, but not as overtly as he is racist and homophobic. Right. At the beginning of the movie, you know the arc is going to be him changing, right? Because they establish so firmly who he is at the beginning. And when Jared Leto enters the picture... And, you know, he's mean and homophobic to Jared Leto. And then Leto's like, you want to play some cards? And he's like, yeah, you got money? You know, and it just, that mutual interest is enough for them to sort of break the ice. But what ultimately brings him McConaughey around is the need for money. I really like their dynamic. It is the best part of the movie.
Yeah, And we see through the most of the second act and into the third act of the film, they need each other, but they also realize that they are there. I mean, there's a scene where McConaughey finds Leto on the floor in the hotel room and he's getting high.
No.
And
so that's not what's happening there. Leto is
already high.
Yeah, probably already. But
he's shooting up with the drug.
Yeah, the medicine, right? And
yeah.
The character doesn't want to, is like scared of needles or is not. And McConaughey is like, you need to learn to do this for yourself. Someone's not always going to be around. And then why I know that's not a narcotic drug
is because he's shooting it.
Is because Matthew McConaughey is willing to do it. right? Because throughout most of the film, McConaughey, there's a point where McConaughey, you know, through research and everything, kind of becomes an expert on the best way to live with AIDS and HIV to extend your lifespan. And there's a great scene where they go shopping and, you know, he's like, oh, this shit will eat you from the inside out. What a surprise. FDA approved, you know, and Jared Leto keeps trying to put junk food in the basket. And, you know, McConaughey's like, nope, put the shit back. This is going to make you sick. Don't do it. And he's very strict on Rayon about, are you high? Fucking hell. Like, he's really trying to take care of her. And so that's why I think in that scene, she's not shooting up heroin. It's just the medicine.
No. That's what I meant. I meant that she was already high.
Yeah.
And she's trying to take this drug that is supposed to help her. And he comes in, and it's a touching scene. Is because he's showing that he cares about her, and you know that he does value her as a person. And he does it in multiple different scenes, but
yeah, the grocery store is another one where he seizes. So essentially, after he gets AIDS, he gets sort of treated homophobically, right? His friends.
Oh, right. He gets ostracized out of his.
They spray paint the F word, the other F word on his house. And
And that's another thing that when he gets the shotgun out of his trunk.
Man, he overkilled that door. He could have kicked that flimsy little, you know, mobile home door in, but he destroyed it with that shotgun.
You imagine your neighbor shooting their door with a shotgun and like hear, the cops not show here. Up.
I still live here. Yeah.
But I mean, it's.
But that grocery store scene where he sees his old friend who has essentially disowned him. And then that friend sees Rayon in his peripherals, like, and drops the other F word. And this kind of annoys, you know, McConaughey's character, and he puts him in a damn headlock and he's like, shake her hand, you know, and it's that moment where you see that McConaughey is sort of, you know, not the homophobe he once was, that his relationship with Rayon has changed him, which I think is excellent, because I feel like for a lot of people in the real world, that's how they break out of their prejudices, is by having a friend, you know, that someone that maybe they relate with on a different level, be it cards or video games or whatever. And then they find, well, I mean, it's obvious that Jared Leto's character is a part of the LGBT community, but that's how you kind of learn and understand the hardships that another person goes through that you wouldn't. And that's what I like about this. It just it's such a good relationship, their characters, where they sort of benefit each other in a lot of ways. You know, Matthew McConaughey is very much trying to keep Rayon healthy, and Rayon is, by virtue of being herself, changing Ron Woodruff to be less of a douchebag.
Right. Yeah, no. They each are helping each other in different ways, and by the end of the film, and they share that last embrace, you know, where Leto hugs McConaughey,
yeah,
or gives he, you know, he says, hey, I, you know, this is my, I cashed out my what was it, insurance, or I think it was the insurance policy.
Yeah, he had a life insurance, and he says he sold it. And I guess maybe what you do when you sell it is you make someone else the beneficiary. You charge them to be the beneficiary, which I think is probably illegal.
Well, in the 80s, that might have been a thing.
Yeah. Right. So I'm guessing what she did was sell the her life insurance back to her father. So like, when I die, you'll get this much money if you give me set amount of money right now. And this essentially keeps the Dallas Buyers Club, the business that McConaughey is running, is afloat. and that,
right.
You know, and you kind of get the idea, like, Rayon at this point knows that her time is pretty limited, and maybe even Matthew McConaughey picks up on it in that scene where they hug, which is one of the best scenes in the film.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. It's the scene that the entire movie's really been working towards.
Yep.
And that is it. And it wasn't a long scene either. It was, you know, a minute, 2 minutes,
right.
Maybe.
Nothing overstays its welcome in this. Like, and that's kind of why, again, I was a little mildly offended that you called it Oscar bait, because I feel like the movie has opportunities to really hammer home that Oscar bait, like specifically the death of Rayon. There's no scene.
It's not on screen, right?
Around, like, people around them, like around her, and like, oh, crying, and as the beep 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 beep, like it doesn't do that, right? You know,
did you hear that when you were dead?
No, I did not. I was busy being dead, Dick. But she, you know, and I think that's kind of the smart aspect of this movie, is I don't think it's really like, in all honesty, I felt like maybe it could have tried to push to pull the heartstrings even more than it did, you know?
Yeah. I enjoyed... you know, when Ron comes back into the state from where he was flying in from, he comes back from out of town, and he comes back to the hotel, and he asks the black lady who is working for him. He goes, "Oh, hey, where's the idiot?" And she's like, "Oh, I thought you knew."
It's not how it goes. Like, what you, this is, like, you know how you have friends and you're like, what's up, dipshit, and all that, yeah. Right? And so you're like, "Hey, where's the dipshit?" "Oh, he died last week." What? You know, like, how shitty do you feel? And then in that moment, do you wish that, you know, like, is Ron the kind of person who would wish, "Man, I should have told her I loved her more," you know?
Well, I mean, you see, I mean, you kind of see that when he goes to the hospital and he goes into the room and Rayon's friend or whoever that was, that
is
she
packing
was
up,
a lot of,
right?
Is packing up all of her
I
things.
I think they were lovers.
Yeah, probably. And you know, and then he has this look, and he knows that she's dead. And then you see him go storm into the room in the hospital where the doctor is, and he has that, you know, physical confrontation with him. And I think that's the scene where we're meant to pull from that Ron wish he would have said more to Rayon when she was alive.
Right. And
I think it's an effective scene.
It's awesome. And that breaks him, you know, when he gets back to his place of business and, hey, they can't afford it. And he's like, "Give it to him." You know, like, he sort of is like, "Fine, if they can't afford it.
Sell the Cadillac." You know?
Yeah. People need to get this stuff. Because there's a scene earlier in the film where there's a guy's like, "I've got $100," and he's like, "It's $400. Get to stepping." And that same guy is in line at the end of the movie with the $400 in hand, you know, and that just kind of Ron at that moment is like, "All right, if you can't afford it, I'm going to give it to him," that sort of thing. So
it's
such a good character arc.
Yeah, and the character of Rayon serves as the linchpin to the arc, you know, and she dies with probably about 15 minutes left in the film, and then we see, you know, Ron going to court and losing the court battle for between him and the FDA, and even the judge is like, "The law doesn't make sense."
Yeah,
it's the law.
Like, I have to follow the law, but the shit doesn't make sense. Like, if you're like, in this movie, Ron is told he has a month to live. And he can't get the AZT, which made me think of NZT. Remember that?
Right.
But he goes and he digs it out of the trash, which I'm like, genius. Like, that's what someone would do. He has nothing to lose, right? "I got nothing to lose. I'm going to take drugs out of the trash." And, you know, finally he gets to that point, that hospital in Mexico, where that guy's just giving him stuff that's readily available in Mexico, and he peps him right back up, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where he gets the idea to start slinging this overseas, back in the States. So, yeah, it's so good also in that message of, like, the FDA, they work for, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, right?
Right.
They get their stipends and shit, and it's a dirty game. And I appreciated that. And I also appreciated the fact that Matthew McConaughey's character, Ron, had done his research, right? He was not, this character is not
an idiot.
He's not dumb at any point.
Yeah.
Like
right.
When he gets AIDS, he immediately goes into research mode, and he's able to go to Jennifer Garner and be like, how about this drug? How do I get this drug? This drug has been shown to do this. You can't do it in the States. You can't get it here because there's so much litigation and red tape. But in Mexico, you can pretty much just walk in and get this stuff. So that whole arc is great. You know, and again, the idea, like the judge says, if someone is terminally ill, they should have the right to take whatever the fuck they want because they have nothing to lose. And if there are these experimental drugs that the FDA hasn't approved, they should be able to do it. Now, one thing I thought of is the COVID vaccine is it wasn't approved by the FDA when people started taking it.
Right, because it was like an emergency
process. And so it was like, could you do a cutout to say, hey, if people are terminal, and back in those days, AIDS was terminal, no matter, or HIV, no matter when you got it, right, or how early you detected it, it was pretty much terminal back then. Why wouldn't they be able to get access to these experimental things?
Right,
it's a great argument politically.
Yeah, and then we, you know, we see Ron lose this case, and then we find out that, you know, he lived 7 years past
right.
his
right. One of the most effective parts of this movie. So throughout the film, like, he gets diagnosed, and it's like day one, like, you've got 30 days, and they show you day 30. And they just black screen with white text. And one of the last things you see in the film is day 2,557, you know, and it's just hammering home the fact that, you know, he was able to, through his persistence and willingness to skirt the law, extend his own life and also that of his customers. Which, again, another just really effective, simple bit of storytelling.
Yeah. So we didn't talk anything about Jennifer Garner. What did you think of her in this one?
I think she did an admirable job. I think that, unfortunately, she's surrounded by people with more to work with.
Right.
I don't think any shortcomings are her own fault. It's just that the script really didn't have her doing a lot, right? There's the scene at the end of the movie where she's like, hey, she was my friend too. She starts to get a little verklempt.
Yes.
But largely, she's not asked to put in the performances of her two male counterparts.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because I do regard her as a pretty good actress. And you saw that at the end scene where, you know, she does get choked up. Verklempt, right, the word you used. I do think that, you know, her part just wasn't written to the depth that, and I don't think it could have been with
right.
the movie.
It would have been weird to
right.
have this other, like, sometimes you just need contrast, right? And
right,
she's
right.
sort of a steady hand and a steady figure.
Well, she's our window into the medical side of the AZT drug, and, you know, how it's impacting doctors and the pharmaceutical companies and how, you know, controlling they are. And at one point in time, she's being told by her boss that, hey, you need to push this drug. And she's like, I don't really want to.
Right, because look, it's killing people.
Right, right. And so it does, I mean, her part in the role does serve a purpose because it does move the story forward and give that contrast.
Well, and she is the higher ground of
right.
Medical professional, right? Like, she's in it for the right reason. She wants to see people healed and get better. And and what's interesting about the doctor character, the main doctor, is I don't know that he's the bad guy, right? I think in a lot of ways he's following the law of the land. He's doing what he's supposed to do. But sometimes following the rules isn't the right thing.
Right. Yeah, I think his part is meant to be the morally gray area where...
And I think it's to show that legal isn't necessarily moral, right?
Right.
Legality and morality are two different things.
Right. And it's, you know, it's effective. All the roles here are effective roles. And, you know, Steve Zahn's character, even though it's a very small part.
I thought they were brothers. Like, at the beginning, they were talking about how's dad, the old man, you know, and I thought he was talking about his own dad, but no, Steve Zahn's just a buddy.
Right. And,
he's the only buddy who sticks by him, right?
Yes, correct.
And I love the scene where they're in the hospital for, like, the third time or whatever, and McConaughey's like, bitch, you said 30 days. Here I am a year later. Go fuck yourself. And you just see, like, Steve Zahn smiling to himself with his head down, you know, just really appreciating the fieriness of his friend, who is right, you know? Like,
yeah,
you need to know where I got my drugs? Fuck you. Like, you don't get to know shit.
Right. And so it's, no matter how small the role or, you know, everybody commits and they're well written to the point where you put the right actor in the role and you get what you get. And so I just think that even though Steve Zahn wasn't in the film very much, every time he was on screen, it was effective. Same with Jennifer Gardner. Same with the other doctor, who I thought was pretty good.
Right.
I don't know the guy's name, but, you know,
it's just Dennis O'Hare. Oh, no, maybe. That might be the Mexican doctor. I don't know. No, Dr. Voss is the Mexican doctor. Yeah, Dennis O'Hare is the actor. Okay.
Okay. But yeah, it's just when you have a film that has all of these characters and you put the right actors in those roles, this is the film you get. And even if the movie, like, you know, Jean-Marc Vallée, did he write this film? I don't think.
No, he did not. It was written by Melissa Wallach and Craig Borton.
So, you know, good writing shines through, which it did here. And then great acting shines through. And I think it, across the board, it did here too. So I think we've gotten what we need out of this film.
Yeah, I think it spurs a lot of great conversations. And it's a thought-provoking film without being pretentious. And I think that sometimes can be hard to do for some directors and some storytellers where they feel like they got to really, you know, overdo it to get the effect they want. But I think the movie is just really smart. And I'm reminded of, our year one standout, my favorite movie from our first year, Can You Ever Forgive Me, where it's just a good piece of storytelling. And here are these actors portraying these characters, and here's their arc and what they go through. And you don't need anything else other than that. That's what making a good movie is about.
Right.
Take note, Aronofsky.
Aronofsky wish he could make a movie like this.
Yep.
So do you recommend this one?
Yeah, absolutely. It's fantastic. Go watch it. It's on Stars right now if you have said subscription.
Yeah. I echo everything you just said, but one of the most committed performances I've seen from an actor, from McConaughey.
He went on the castaway diet is what happened.
Yeah, he did. And because you're looking at him, and there's several scenes where he is just fucking skin and bones. And then you look at his, like, you know, his him now, and there was, it took him, I think, several years to get back to where he was prior to this film, concerning his body. Is because, like, I think, what was it, Wolf of Wall Street came very shortly after this. And he's still kind of frail in that
movie. Wasn't he still, he was frail in True Detective?
Yeah, yeah.
It must have been around this time.
And so, just one of the most committed performances I've seen. One of the better supporting roles I've seen in a film from Jared Leto. And it's a phenomenal story. And I just, you know, you feel better. Like, you feel like you have a deeper knowledge of something like this after you watch it.
Yeah, it gives you a good history lesson, too. I mean, the character of Rayon is not an actual person, but Ron Woodruff is. And I did a little minor research on YouTube about the guy, and it seemed like they pretty much covered it, right? You know, I don't know how much of a homophobic guy he was at the time, and if that, how much of that arc holds true, that could be a bit of storytelling, you know, but still they make him out to be a pretty good hero in the end.
You know, a classic anti-hero character.
What you think of the scene? The other scene I like too is when there's a woman at the buyer's club and he's like, hey, what's the deal with the girl? She have HIV, and they're like, she's like full blown AIDS. He's like, that sounds hot, you know. Like,
I just and then he goes in the next room, and
like him being like, "Fuck yeah!" Like, it's, you don't really wish it on someone, but you know, when you two parties have AIDS, hey, doesn't hurt anybody if they get down. So I thought that was just there are a lot of really funny moments that I enjoyed, mostly between Rayon and Ron. Like I said, the moment where Red keeps putting like these male pictures all over Ron's wall where he keeps his naked ladies, and I just enjoyed their sort of roommate banter. Good. There's a lot to love here.
She paints the walls you know, this dark red color, and he's like, what the fuck is this? And she's like, oh, it's almost Christmas.
Yeah.
and then another funny moment is he, you know, tells, you know, I forget which part of the movie it's in, but he tells her, he goes, you know, God really missed the mark when he blessed you with a set of balls. you know, and it just, and that was a tender moment between them. And that was just his way of kind of telling Rayon, hey, I see you. And you are who you are.
Right.
Are being,
and it's something I think that only can be said between two friends and not be offensive.
Right.
Right.
Correct.
Like, at that point, they are close enough where I think Rayon can receive that for what it is. And it's not, you know, him being a dick, you know.
Right. Right.
Excellent stuff. We both recommend it.
Yeah. So what are we doing now?
Oh, it's draft night, baby.
What?
So next month is October, which is, we generally try to keep it spooky. We did
Vampires last year,
with mixed results. And the year before was psychological thrillers, which to me almost isn't quite spooky enough for a Halloween-inspired month. So this year for October, Mark and I are doing creature features. So big monsters, little monsters, I just say monsters in general, weird bugs, something that would be a creature. We're going to avoid the Voorheeses and the pinheads. Those aren't creatures. Those are humanoid, you know, shaped things. So we want little monsters, big just monsters or creatures, anything that would fall in that. You know, we'll see if one of us blows it, but, you know, I don't think so.
I don't think we will. Yeah. I don't think we will. So just, you know, to a disclaimer here, there were a lot of films that I wanted to pick, but you have already reviewed them for your other podcast. So,
Really? Like, which ones?
Yeah. Gremlins. Jurassic Park was Jurassic Park movies. I looked at them. I wasn't
okay,
gonna pick them.
Okay, if you looked at them, but if you had picked the Jurassic Park movie for Creature Feature Month in October,
I mean, the original Jurassic Park is very much a
horror film. I'm scared as to what you've selected. Now I'm scared.
You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I think I'd like you to go first. There's no chance of you picking what I have, but I have a mild hope you'll pick at least one of them because I have three movies I want to go for, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, the first one, and I went back and forth is because I think you've mentioned it here on the podcast as something you haven't seen, but you don't know if you're necessarily interested in it,
okay.
But you regard it as something that you probably should see.
Interesting.
Right. But I selected from the year 2017, directed by your boy, Guillermo del Toro.
Ooh.
The Shape of Water.
Oh, okay. Again, probably not Halloween-y, but creature feature nonetheless.
Very much creature feature.
Yeah, I love Del Toro. Pan's Labyrinth is one of my favorite movies. We're going to see a real difference between you and I here.
okay, all right. But yeah, no. You haven't seen it, correct?
I have not seen it.
Okay, good. That's all I care about.
Man, I don't know. Okay. Okay. I just have three movies.
I don't know.
So what we're going to watch.
I only had three movies.
I know. Well, I have four, but I have one of them I'm not going to pick. But so you know me, Mark.
Yeah.
Guess the year.
It's like 92, 85.
82.
74.
1982. Okay. We're going to go back to 1982. And we're going to watch the ultimate creature feature starring Wilford Brimley, Keith David, Kurt Russell, directed by John Carpenter.
Oh, The Thing.
We're going to watch The Thing. I've never seen it. I've been meaning to watch it for a long time. It's a legendary film. That's why I'm picking it, is because I've never seen it, and I need to. We're specifically watching the one from 1982. We're not watching the one from the 50s or whatever. The one that's known for its incredible special effects and all that stuff. So
I'm on board. I mean, it's been a very long time since I've seen The Thing. I'm interested. I can get on board with that. All right. Well, for my second one, and hey,
please make it spooky. Come on, man.
This
like, if we start the month off and we get spookier, that's fine, but come on. I'm ready.
So, this is October's not 5 months.
No, it's
five weeks,
4 week month. I double checked.
Okay. All right, good. All right. So I had three films total to pick from, and one of them was Pan's Labyrinth. And you just mentioned that it's one of your favorites.
Pan's Labyrinth. I wouldn't be objecting to, but double Del Toro. I mean,
right. No, and it's not spooky.
It is.
I mean,
though,
it's fantastically
crazy.
Right,
the
correct.
Eyeball hand
yes.
guy. And,
yeah. Correct.
Yeah. I love that.
But
movie.
I'm not. So I'm not going to pick that. But that was my third film that I was considering. But I'm going to pick an A24 movie.
Are we watching Tusk?
We are not watching Tusk.
Thank
even
God.
Though that would be a great one. Have you seen that?
No.
Have you? Oh God, damn it! I should have picked that one. That's a phenomenal movie.
Yeah.
We're going to watch from the year 2021. It is a subtitled film, just so you know.
Yay. Well, can't we just do Pan's Labyrinth then? If we're going to watch subtitles, but go ahead.
We are going to watch the Scandinavian film Lamb.
Is this the one with the killer lamb? Like the crazy? I might be on board with this. Is this the one that's like so bad it's good? Like super campy?
It's not campy. I do not think it's campy. A24 movies aren't typically campy.
Oh God, Mark.
But the trailer makes this look very intriguing.
L-A-M-M?
L-A-M-B.
Oh,
Lamba. Lamba.
Oh, God. Like, you always find a way to at least pick.
Listen, love finds a way.
Okay, so this makes this easier then. You know, because I don't normally like to piss you off.
No, why would you be pissed off if I picked you told me to pick something. Crazy,
we're
going to
do this.
Creature.
We're
going to
watch one of my favorite creature features. Okay. All right? Get ready for your butthole to be blown away. You ever heard of the hungry heifer? No, you haven't. Of course not. Why would you?
Right.
Because.
Why would I?
We're watching a movie starring people you've never heard of. Scott Grimes, Lainey Curtis, Terrence Mann.
Don't know them.
It's from 1988. It's rated PG-13. Runs for an hour and a half. What more do you want?
I don't know.
We're going to watch, get this. We're not watching Critters. We're watching Critters 2, The Main Course. My favorite Critters movie.
All right. Do I need to watch Critters 1?
No.
To understand where the fuck this is at.
I mean, you can. I can give you the heads up. Then I'll tell you that Critters 1, these little animals invaded a small town and killed a bunch of people, and a young redheaded boy was the sole survivor. Not the sole survivor, but the main survivor in the lead. And he is the lead in Critters 2.
Okay.
There's aliens.
You're going to end our Halloween month on some bullshit. All right,
hey,
I'm just letting
you didn't pick any horror movies, so...
I 100% picked horror movie.
No. Shape of Water.
Lamb is a horror movie.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, we'll see. Because Critters 2 is the shit.
The tagline for Lamb is, a childless couple discovers a mysterious newborn on their farm in Iceland.
That's not horror.
It's horror when you find out the newborn is a baby lamb.
It's a newborn lamb. Whoop-dee-doo.
That they treat like a child.
That's just weird. You just picked weird. Don't worry. No, Critters isn't scary either. It's funny, actually. It's fucking silly.
All right, let's run them down. So we're going to go to The Shape of Water, followed by The Thing.
You just don't like horror movies or something. So, yeah, I picked The Thing.
Lamb.
Yeah.
And then Critters 2.
Critters 2.
The Main Course.
Jumping you right in the middle. Listen, I've seen all of the original Critters movie, and
How many are there? Easily
the best one.
All right. Okay, that's fine.
Listen, what happened to, I haven't seen it. I'm willing to watch anything.
I am 100% willing to watch it. I'm just saying you likely pick some bullshit in
the month. You want to do a bonus episode in Critters 1?
No, man. No, I don't. I have no interest in any of that. Because I don't have to watch it. For Critters 2, I have to watch this. So I will watch it. I'll watch it with an open mind.
No, you won't, but that's okay. Oh, we're going to watch this one in person. Oh, baby.
We are going to watch.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Anyways, once again, we give a shout out to Here's to Now, the Los Angeles alternative rock band, for allowing us to use their music here on the podcast this month. Be sure to hit the show notes, get all the links to their social media accounts. They're doing big things. Give them a like, a follow, and a subscribe. And make sure you're downloading their music wherever you get your music from. We appreciate them. If you want to follow the podcast on any social media platform, we're on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, right here on YouTube where you're watching us. Be sure to hit the subscribe button when it pops up. You can find us at Movie Draft House. And if you want to follow Jeff on Twitter and let him know, hey, man.
You got nothing.
A24 makes some banger-ass shit. You should get
they
behind
make
Lamp.
Shit. I've watched one of their movies called Men. It was so dumb. Like, have you seen that?
No.
It's horrible.
But you can find him on Twitter at Podcast by Jeff.
Yeah, and if you want to get in touch with Mark and peer pressure him into watching Critters 1 before Critters 2, you could do so on Twitter at I Heard You Liked. I should say, the other film that was on my list that I was thinking of was the James Gunn-directed Slither.
Oh, I consider that as well.
Yeah, but
I didn't put it on the list, but I did consider it.
It was that or The Thing, and then I was like, I need to watch The Thing. The only reason I thought about not putting The Thing on there is in case we did Carpenter chronologically, but I was like, we're years away from that even being a thing. So by then I can rewatch it.
Yeah. Anyways, Jeff, any words of wisdom?
Nope. See you guys next week.